Okay, so I thank the organizers for asking me to give a talk. So I'm generally interested in Calabi-Yau manifolds and derived categories. So sort of what you can see about the geometry of Calabi-Yau is from the derived category. Maybe I should. So I'm going to use this kind of notation here. So dB of x will be this is the bounded derived category of coherent sheaves. And I will use this kind of thing only for X's smooth projective. So smooth projective over C. Okay, so then let me introduce one bit of notation, which is kind of a notation that I'll use all the time. So if you think of this dB of x as being some kind of complicated invariant of x, then you can ask, well, when do two varieties have the same derived category? So when are they indistinguishable from the derived category point of view? And I'll denote this by this symbol. So this is, let's say that the derived equivalent. If these categories are isomorphic. As triangulated categories over C. So let's say as C linear triangulated categories. Okay, so what I'm going to talk about is, I'm first going to make some kind of general comments. So this notion and Calabi-Yau and so on, just some general stuff. And then I also want to discuss a particular example of a particular explicit Calabi-Yau threefold that was constructed by Gross and Popescu and what it says about a fundamental group. So, I mean, this project sort of started from the question of, well, you have this notion of equivalence, what sort of things are invariant under this notion? And one particular question that came up is the fundamental group an invariant, or is being simply connected an invariant? And so this example that I will explain in the second half is a counterexample to that, so some case where the fundamental group becomes different. I should say at this point that I think this is so far the first talk that actually talks about derived categories, right? So if there are any questions about any of these things, then please just ask in between. So I should start with a few general comments, I think. So first of all, some examples. There's a classical example that kind of started this theory, which is the case of abelian varieties. So for abelian varieties, let's say I take an abelian variety A, and then I have the dual abelian variety. So I have this dual A hat, which is just the moduli space of line bundles of degree zero on A. And in this case, so Mukai showed that if you take the product of A cross A hat, which has its two projections to A and A hat, P and Q, and then on this product you have a tautological line bundle coming from the fact that A hat parameterizes line bundles on A, right? So you have a Poincaré bundle. Which is just whose restriction to every every slice. This is just the line bundle parameterized by this corresponding point. And then you can do a transform by pulling back complexes or sheaves from A, tensoring by this, and then pushing them forward. So you have a transform, which is given by the formula S of something is RQ lower star at this Poincaré bundle here. Okay, so this goes from the derived category of A to the derived category of A hat. And Mukai showed that that's an equivalence of derived categories, right? And so this is usually known as the Fourier transform. Okay, so this was, I think, the first instance of some interesting equivalence, right? So this says that an abelian variety and a Stuhl abelian variety, they are the same from the point of view of the derived category. And let me say, so I don't want to write it down, but let me say generally that Bondal and Orlov and other people, they showed that actually any equivalence between derived categories like this is always given in this kind of form. There's always some object on the product, so that this sort of process here actually induces the equivalence. Okay, so these are actually quite geometric. And another general feature is that quite often, if you have an equivalence, it's due to the fact that one of the varieties is a moduli space of some kind of objects on the other one. Okay. Another interesting example is, say, let's take X to be a K3 surface. And then if you have some other variety that's derived equivalent to X, this will happen if and only if Y is also a K3 and the transcendental lattices are Hodge isometric. So, and there's a Hodge isometry. Between the transcendental lattices. So this is the complement of the neuron severity group inside of H2. Okay, so this is shown by showing that this from this condition one can actually construct a moduli space of certain kind of vector bundles, and that this moduli space actually becomes isomorphic to Y. And then the equivalence is given by, again, some universal vector bundle on the product. I don't actually know who proved this. Okay. Good. Then I know. Just actually any smooth projective variety, even. Right? I mean, it comes out. Yeah. So in fact, a priori, Y could be anything, but one can show that it has to be two-dimensional, it has to have trivial canonical bundle, and so on, and eventually one gets it has to be a K3. And then in fact it has to be actually a very concretely related K3. Okay, then I mentioned one other example, so this just to show you sort of where the Calabi-Yau condition comes in. So Bondal and Orlov showed that there are some cases when this implies isomorphism. So derived equivalent variety is isomorphic. This happens when plus or minus kx, so the canonical class is either ample or anti-ample. So this is the so-called reconstruction theorem. So this says that in the case where canonical bundle is ample or minus ample, there are no interesting equivalences. So the interesting equivalences are, they tend to happen just when the canonical bundle is trivial. So the most interesting class is somehow the k-trivial class, the class of those varieties. Okay, also, as my last general thing, so this notion of derived equivalence is very well understood for curves. Curves, just derived equivalence, same as isomorphic, and also for surfaces. So for surfaces, Bridgen and Maciocia have done through the whole classification and just established exactly when two things can be derived equivalent. In dimension 3 or higher, it's something of a mystery, this notion. Okay. So there's a couple of invariants that are preserved by derived equivalence, and among those maybe I should mention the dimension, also the Kodaira dimension. The canonical ring. The order of the canonical. So meaning that, for instance, if the canonical bundle is trivial on a variety, then any derived equivalent variety must also have the trivial canonical bundle. Things like that. And these all have to, so if you notice, they all seem to have something to do with the canonical bundle, and that basically, although I don't want to explain it in detail, but this basically goes back to shared duality. So you have shared duality, which involves the canonical bundle and the dimension of the variety, and there's a intrinsic way of formulating shared duality that doesn't use the geometry, but just uses the derived category. And because one has the shared duality, one can recover these kind of invariants that come from the canonical bundle. For other invariants, it becomes a question. So for instance, Betti numbers or Hodge numbers. I can just put a question mark. What is? It is not, that's right, but there's a categorical way of saying that your category has a shared duality functor. So there's something called a shared functor. So the shared functor in the geometric is basically tensor by the canonical bundle and shift by the dimension of the variety. There's a sign. There's no multiplication by minus one. It just, so you can abstract shared duality into saying that a category has a so-called shared functor. And the shared functor is given by some universal property, and so it must be preserved by any kind of equivalence. Baba, up to isomorphism. So it characterizes the object up to isomorphism. Yeah. Okay, so Betti numbers, Hodge numbers is not known in general. Some people think it should be the case, but the only thing that's known is that certain combinations of Betti numbers or of Hodge numbers are known to be invariant, but not the whole package. I want to state one result that I proved with Mishna Popa, which is that if you have two varieties that are derived equivalent, then their H1 is preserved. And this is as rational Hodge structures, as Q Hodge structures. So geometrically, this says that the Picard varieties are isogenous, right? Because of the Q coefficients. So this this we did some time ago, and this again, this uses the fact that you can see line bundles on the derived category by tensor product, right? Like, you think if this is some space of line bundles, and every line bundle actually induces some equivalence on the derived category, where you just tensor a complex by this line bundle, and so this geometric interpretation allows you to reconstruct this up to isogeny. Okay, so then No, for some strange reason, not. But somehow, people didn't seem to be paying attention to that question much, so somehow nobody looked at this before. Okay. Now this led us to the question. How about a somewhat more precise topological invariant, right? So I can think of H1. I think of H1 of XQ as being maps from the fundamental group to Q for some base point. I mean, the base point doesn't matter. And so you can ask, well, what about the fundamental group itself? Is the reason that this is preserved, is it maybe because actually the fundamental group is preserved? And we believed for some time that should be the case, but then unfortunately we discovered that it's not the case. So that's this business with the fundamental group, right? So unfortunately the fundamental group is not preserved. And in fact I'm going to explain a specific example. So there is a simply connected Calabial threefold X. So the Hodge numbers are H11 and H12 are both 2. And this thing has a free action by this group Z8 cross Z8. Okay, so I can, in particular, I have a nice quotient, like I can take X mod G. But X is derived equivalent to this quotient of itself by this finite group. So of course that ruins the invariance of the fundamental group, right? Because in this case I have pi 1 of x is 1, but the quotient obviously has fundamental group equal to g. So it doesn't quite work. Okay. X mod G is also Calabial, yes. Actually the same. Yes. But that's what people say. I don't know. But so by symplectic you mean it fixes the canonical. Yeah, right, it's preserved in this case, yeah. Okay, so for those of you who are interested in like very explicit, very concrete sort of descriptions of things, I will give you a very explicit, very concrete description of this thing, like how this X is constructed, and I'll say something about how this equivalence. So this X is, as I said, this X is, there's a whole class of Calabial threefolds constructed in terms of abelian surfaces by Gross and Popescu many years ago, and this is one particular one of these, but I'll explain the construction. Also, for truth in advertising, I should say that this result actually turns out was already known beforehand. So, in fact, this proposition actually, in the end, it's due to Bach. So. I mean, I worked this out very carefully, and then I discovered, in fact, that some years earlier, Bach had also looked at this question and had gotten the same results. So this derived equivalence and so on. If you're interested in sort of details and computations and so on, then you might actually be interested in looking at his paper. So it's just on the, it's not published, but it's just on an archive in 09. He gives a very concrete description of this equivalence. Like he does it sort of very explicitly. I did it more by appealing to general theory somehow. So his proof is somewhat long, but more concrete. Okay. So I wanted to. I wanted to make a few general comments, though, first, before I actually describe the example. So what does this, where does this leave you in terms of the general story? So so there's some time ago, Heubrechts and Nieper-Wiskirchen they looked at derived equivalence for varieties with trivial first term class, okay, of which these things are of course examples. And so they start from a basic observation that if you have a variety with C1 equals zero, then you can actually say quite a lot about the structure. So there's some basically a classification, which is, so say you have X with C1X equals zero in over the reals, say. So then, the fact that the first term class is zero means that you can use Yau's theorem to produce special kind of metrics, right? Like Ricci-Flatt, Keller metrics. And then Bogomolov and Bovil they look at what this says about the structure. So you take one of these metrics, you analyze the holonomy of this metric, and that by looking at the classification of possible holonomy groups and putting in this condition, you can actually see that there's only basically three types of this. So in fact, there's a finite et al. Cover. And this X prime, according to the irreducible decomposition for the holonomy, it splits up into a product of an abelian variety and then two other possible classes of varieties. So the A is abelian. The YIs can be simply connected Calabi-Yaus. Say of dimension at least 3 to eliminate some ambiguity. And then the ZJs can be holomorphically symplectic. Okay, so this is the structure of one of these things. And so Heubrechts and Nieper-Wiskirchen, they asked whether this kind of decomposition here is invariant under derived equivalence. So meaning if I start with a variety that has a decomposition of a certain type, and I look at some derived equivalent one, do I see the same kind of pieces? For example, it is known that if you have an abelian variety, an abelian variety can only be derived equivalent to another abelian variety, not to anything else. They showed that if you take a holomorphic symplectic variety, it can only be derived equivalent to another holomorphic symplectic variety. But if you're in the Calabi-Yau case, for instance, it's not clear that the Calabi-Yau couldn't go to some other funny business. But I think people generally believe that the structure should be sort of preserved. Okay, so the question was, is the structure of this decomposition preserved? Let me write it down. So a particularly interesting case would be, let's say I take X to be a simply connected Calabi-Yau threefold. And then I take some Y derived equivalent to X, right? According to the structure theorem, there'll be some finite cover. So the first thing is, if I have this, I know because of the invariance of the dimension that Y is again three-dimensional. Okay, so I know that dim Y is three. I know that the canonical bundle is trivial. And I know, in fact, that C1 of Y is again equal to zero, right? All of these things are preserved. Because of the kind of example that I mentioned before, I cannot expect Y to be simply connected in general. Right? So this is somehow how it ties in with this picture, right? That you have to take this finite cover. But I do know from that there is again some finite cover. And there's basically three cases that are possible. So you could have, if you think about this decomposition, Y prime could be Y prime could be an abelian threefold. That's one case. Y prime could be simply connected Calabi-Yau. Or it could be a product of an elliptic curve in a K3. Right? So then in this particular case, the Heubrechts and Niebuhr-Wiskirchen question becomes, well, can these actually happen? So and I think somehow, I mean, most people that I've talked to, they seem to believe that the answer should be no. Like somehow the derived category should not allow you to relate a simply connected Calabi-Yau to a quotient of an abelian threefold. But we don't know how to prove that. Yes. Yes, very good. Yeah, so in fact, you can say here that H1 has to equal zero, right? So in this case or this case, you're actually, you have H1 equal to zero too. So, I mean, there's a fairly limited number of possibilities, I think. I mean, so there's a paper by Ogurisso and Sakurai where they actually determine what the possible groups can be, right? So here, this Y there would be a finite quotient of either this case or this case, and that's only a rather small list of groups that can happen according to their paper. But yeah, so okay. So maybe, I mean, I don't really know, but I mean, one could. So it is possible to recover the H in this particular case when the H1 is zero. It is actually possible to recover H3 with its odd structure. from the drives category. So one interesting question would be like, okay, to what extent are there some cases, for instance, where you can distinguish these by some kind of Hodge theoretic invariant or something? But I mean, I don't know whether this works. Okay, so that's it for the generality. So any questions about the general sort of things? Okay, then let me describe the example. So I already said this example, this comes from the cross-Popescu kind of construction. So this actually has to do with cross-Popescu and 1-8. So the 8 is 1-8 polarized abelian surfaces. So let me first explain a bit about that. So let's take an 1-8 polarized abelian surface. So A is an abelian surface, right? And then L is a polarization of type 1-8. Yes. Five? Oh, no. Yeah, eight. Eight is correct. So this condition with a polarization means that, I mean, there's various ways of saying that, but the one that I want to use is, so this L is an ample. This L is ample. And so it defines an isogeny that I'll call phi L from A to pick not of A. And so what you do is you take a point and then you translate this ample line bundle by the point A. So you pull it back by this translation map. And then you make something of degree zero by tensoring by the inverse. And so this is an isogeny, and the kernel is, so to say it's 1-8 polarized means that the kernel is isomorphic to C8 squared. And then one can show that, so this implies that, so H naught of L is equal to 8, from which you can conclude that, because it's ample, that so 1/2 L squared is the Euler characteristic of L is H naught of L, so you get that L squared is equal to 16. And one can also show that L is actually very ample. Okay, so this polarization will embed A into P7 as a surface of degree 16. So L gets embedded, no. A gets embedded by L into P7. And then because I have the kernel of the polarization there, I'm going to call this G. This is the group G. This G is going to act on everything. And you can, so Gross and Popescu show that you can choose the coordinates on P7. So choose the coordinates to make the G action nice. So I'm going to write G as generated by two transformations, sigma and tau, just the two coordinates. And these will act by this kind of formula here. So sigma will be, sigma just rotates the coordinates, and tau just scales them by some root of unity. Something like this. Okay, so now the interesting idea of Gross and Popescu was to look at the quadrics, all the quadrics that contain this image. So quadrics in P7 containing A. And so they showed that if you take this pair, A and this polarization generic, then there's actually four quadrics. I mean, four, it's a four-dimensional space. So one of them is, for instance, given by this equation here. So you have some parameter, and then in these coordinates, it's x0 squared minus then you also have the other quadrics that you get by applying this sigma to it. Okay, those are the four quadrics. And this y is just a point in P2, which is general. Okay, and then they showed that there's also a certain kind of cubic, and this abelian surface is the intersection of those four quadrics and this cubic. But the interesting thing is, if you just look at the quadrics will intersect generically in a threefold. Right? So the intersection, so let's call this V, this is the notation, V at Y is the intersection of these four quadrics. This is a threefold with because of this kind of choice, it's not smooth. But if you choose the point y generically, which again means that you start from AL general in moduli, then this has only ordinary double points. So this has only 64 ordinary double point singularities. And these ODPs, they're actually just the orbit of one particular point under the group, right? We have this group action which has 64 elements, and these are just exactly the orbit of, so this is G orbit of this point 0, y1, y2, y3, 0, minus y3, minus y2, minus y1. So it's basically, if you do it by adjunction, right, it's basically a singular Calabi-Yau. So in this way, you produce a Calabi-Yau associated to these 1-8 polarized abelian surfaces, right? Okay, now let me, so this is essentially the X that we'll use. So it needs a slight modification, so we have to, since we're dealing with the drive categories, we want to use smooth varieties, we have to resolve the singularities of this thing. Yeah. Yes, you do. So here's how you get the resolution. So you, so there's one. I mean, in this case, you can get it very explicitly, actually. So here's how you make a resolution in this case, right? The general criterion is you want some smooth surface that passes through the nodes. Well, in this case, I have one, and it's the original A. So the original appearance surface A. So A is Weyl, but not Cartier. But it passes exactly through these 64. Node. So if I blow up A, I'll get something that gives me a small resolution. And then I don't actually want that, because that intersects the exceptional curves negatively. So then you want to flop all the 64 curves to get something with positive intersection with A. So you blow up A, and then flop the 64 curves. And then this gives you this produces this X. Okay, so that will be the example. So the fact is that again under this genericity assumption, G acts freely on the original singular guy and permutes the 64 points. If you do this resolution, one can show that the action is still free. So you actually have a free action by, so G acts on this X freely, and the 64 exceptional curves are exactly one orbit again. And so I let me restate this proposition from before. So the statement is that in this particular case, we have X derived equivalent to this quotient. Right? That's there. For this particular X and for this particular group action. Okay, now, so I should say where this comes from, right? So, so for the proof, I do need to explain a bit about the geometry of this thing. In particular, why did I not just do the small resolution by blowing up A, but why do you flop the curves? So you flop the curves so that, I mean, as I said before, if I just blow up A, it has negative intersection with the curves. If I flop them, it has positive intersection. And then A actually induces a vibration in Abelian surfaces. So the basic fact is that this linear system A gives an Abelian vibration. So X, let's call this maybe F, to P1. And so the fibers of this vibration, the smooth fibers are, oh, so it's an Abelian vibration, and has 64 sections. Those are exactly the 64 curves from the blow up. what does this thing look like? So let's say if this is X, that maps down to P1. So the general fiber is just one of these 1/8 polarized abelian surfaces. So that the smooth fibers so if I maybe let's call them A sub T or something. This is a 1/8 polarized. And the polarization comes by, so the polarization L sub T is, you can take, so you, this thing was originally, this X was originally the resolution of something in P7, so I can pull back O of 1, and the polarization on each fiber is just this O of 1, where this is the pullback of. P7 of 1. So this is just, I mean, this is just basically saying that this vibration gives you back the thing that you started from, right? You started from embedding an abelian surface with 1/8 polarization into P7 in such a way that O of 1 was the polarization. And there's actually a one parameter family of things that give you, that give rise to the same four quadrics that I wrote down. And you find this entire one parameter family of 1/8 parameters on 8 polarized things in this particular space X. Okay, those are the smooth fibers. And then the singular fibers. Also, I should say that. So, this term abelian surface. I should specify what the zero element is, right? So for that, I should really choose a section of this thing. So I really have these 64 sections here, and say I choose one particular section, and I decide that gives me the origin on each of these, the unit element on each of these abelian surfaces. Okay, so I. So those are the smooth fibers, and then there's 8 singular fibers, which are elliptic translation scrolls. Something like this. So you take an elliptic curve that's normally embedded into P7, right? So by a degree 8 line bundle, and then this TE is just, so TE is, you choose some point E and E, and then you take the union of all lines X to X plus E for X and E. So you have your curve embedded somehow, and then you choose a fixed point E, and then you take all lines that connect points like this, so the union of all of these lines. That will be a singular surface that's singular along that elliptic curve. Okay, that's the geometry of this thing. So the smooth fibers are these 1/8 polarized things, and then they degenerate at 8 places into these elliptic scrolls. Okay. Right, so now where does the equivalence come from? So the proof of the equivalence is actually relatively simple. So let's take a smooth fiber. A smooth fiber of this X. This equivalent somehow says that such a smooth fiber has to be related in terms of the derived category to the quotient by the G action, right? Well, this relationship works in two steps. So first of all, I have this isogeny that I wrote down at the beginning that goes from A to pick north of A, and the kernel of this is exactly the G orbit of the origin. So the kernel is G orbit of zero. So this isogeny, which is given by the polarization, actually induces an isomorphism between A mod G and pick node of A, which is relatively canonical once I have the polarization. And then the relationship between pick node of A and A comes from the Fourier transform of Mukai at the beginning. So Mukai's gave me this equivalence between the derived category of pick node of A and that of A. Okay, so for smooth fibers, the relation between A and A mod G is that A is derived equivalent to pick node of A by the Poincaré line bundle, and pick node of A is isomorphic to A mod G by the polarization. And so the proof of this is just the proof of for all of X is just that you have to realize that this process is sufficiently canonical once you know A and the polarization that you can actually make it work in a family. And then secondly, that the singular fibers in the family don't cause you trouble. And for that, there is some general technology that lets you do that. So. Okay.